Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Tony Payne and Stephen Lucan. How's it going, guys? Good to see you.
Nice to be here.
We're at it again. Yes. Today's topic is Boomers on the Move, Travel Trends, and Financial Tips for the Golden Years.
Ooh, spicy.
This is a good one.
It's fun.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of in that phase where you sit and at my lunch hour, I'm sitting here wondering what trip I can take next, where I would like
you're
to go.
You're Gen X, though, not Boomer, right?
I'm a Boomer.
You're a Boomer. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I know better than that. You're usually working during lunch, okay?
But I do fantasize about the Maldives on occasion.
There you go.
All right, there we go.
So, but probably won't ever get there because I'm afraid of black water, so.
That's an obstacle.
Yeah.
I know there are a lot of people my age that love to travel. I mean, I was watching I think it was on Netflix recently, a show on The Villages. Have you guys heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
That adult community in
Florida? I've heard of the community, yes. Like I haven't heard of the show.
56 acres.
Yes. Golf carts everywhere.
175,000 people.
Yeah.
I can't remember how many communities, but, you know, it's just one vacation after another,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Partying and dancing. Every time you turn around, there's somebody's doing the line dance.
Yeah.
They're having a good time. So traveling when you're older, peaks and, you know, lots of pitfalls, but lots of great stuff. I want to get into travel as a retirement priority.
Okay.
So you guys meet with clients every day of all age groups. You know, tell me what it looks like for somebody in the boomer age group that wants to start talking about traveling a lot. What kinds of conversations you might have, how they should sort of fit that into their retirement plan.
Well, obviously the first thing we always, what do you like to do, right? Do some people like cruises. I'm not a fan of cruises. I've never been on one, so I can't say I'm not a fan, but
Are you afraid of black water too?
No. I don't want to be in that confined environment with other people because I'll probably get sick. Yeah. I'll just leave it at that, okay. Right?
So you're a hypochondriac.
Right. Okay. Not
that's
quite
a different document.
We all have our
our
weaknesses.
That is a different topic of conversation. But it starts about what you like to do, how far you want to travel. Do you want to go to Antarctica, Australia, Europe, or just drive somewhere for the weekend, right? So what do you like to do? Camper home. Right? There's different kinds of things versus cruise versus airfare. There's all those different things. So cost is usually that. And then what's affiliated with it.
Do you guys find that or feel like that there's something driving it? Is it a generational conversation? I feel like travel might be more poignant for certain generations.
Definitely.
Maybe based on marketing or something. I don't know. Do you see that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's generational shifts between stuff. And maybe even leaving inheritances and leaving things to heirs, or you know what, it's mine. I might as well use it while I'm here. That I mean, there's different approaches, but societally, I think that shifted some to more experiences, more experiential things. Where the idea of, you know what, do I buy this watch or do I go on the trip? A lot more people are taking the trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great point about the generational shift because probably the World War II generation. Their life was not centered around options as much as we have it. We are very fortunate based on the progression of society. So for me to fly across the country for a weekend, I'm willing to do it. It's taxing on your body, but you can do it. And I think some older generation, they say, no way, right? Why would you only go for 3 days?
Don't you think there's some indoctrination to that though from marketing and from social media?
Oh, sure.
Like they didn't have the fear of missing out was not part of their lifestyle.
Yeah, I also think it was economical too, right? They coming through the Great Depression,
right.
World War II, post-World War II, it was sort of you were structured. Society was more structured to stay at home. You're doing this. You're not going anywhere. Maybe once a year you'll go to the beach or then
out of even practicality.
Even the 70s and 80s would go to Disney World once a year, right? So now maybe families are going multiple times. Who knows?
When we hear it a lot, right? I mean, it's the idea of the commercialization of a lot of the vacation towns, cities, et cetera, where, you know, you used to go down to Baja and it was this and, you know, you could buy a lobster for $12 and now it's $100 to get even a lobster in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that shifts and changes. So again, the idea of being aware of that, the cost shifting, you know, when we sit with someone and say, what is it you want to do? and then what do we have? Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have enough, it's hard to look and say, no, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. That's going to bite you in the long run. Yes, you might be able to afford it, put it on a card or pay for it, but you can't really afford it in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Look at timeshares. How much that's changed in the last 30 years, right? The volume of timeshares, right? So travel and vacationing have definitely been marketed more in the last 30, 40 years.
How do you keep from blowing up your plan? I guess it's pure emotion, right? If you're just done with the winters in Ohio and you've decided I'm going to go to Greece for three mm-hmm. weeks, mm-hmm. devil may care. It's pure emotion, not unlike buying 25 pairs of shoes, right?
General trend in overspending those first few years of retirement. People overextend themselves. It's common. It's natural. I see it. I say it's here. It's going to come. It's going to happen. No, we're good. And then it happens. It's just natural, right? And again, it's usually centered around travel.
Is it recoverable?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can recover from it, and you have to pump the brakes. You may have to make some sacrifices later on, but you can build it into your plan.
Sounds like it requires a bucket, though, early on, like a separate bucket consistently, doesn't it?
It does.
So that you're not taking money out of your retirement accounts to do.
And that's part of it, though. Depending upon your strategy, it may be fine that it's coming out of your retirement accounts because you planned for it, but that's going back to, well, when I started saving and I began my saving strategy, was I replacing just my income today mm-hmm. where I didn't have the time to travel for months on end? Or am I saving for my goal, my aspiration? And if you're doing that, it's a lot easier to say, I can go on that trip.
And then you might be paying for more than just you and your spouse.
True.
Right? The kids, the grandkids, have you seen that too? It's like all of a sudden you're paying for a group of 10 people, right? And it's like you're adding a comma or two, right? No, one comma, thankfully, but it's expanding, right? Exactly. It's expanding the budget significantly.
And for the inner financial planner in me, it's hard to rationalize, but you think about it. If you're somebody who's done well, you're enjoying, you want to enjoy the fruits of your labor, you're in your early 50s. How many of your peers that you're friends with, you look around, have the 2 weeks to even travel with you? Mm-hmm. So the ability to say, okay, am I subsidizing some of this for others? Because it's part of our good time. You know, I pay for the rental or something. I mean, depending upon your dynamics to know, can I do this? Can I afford it? That's all part of having a plan because that's the control. That's the financial freedom that financial planning gives you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, how much do the travel rewards and credit card perks really work?
Well, you could save that for Cole because Cole is the expert.
Yes, we do have
but
an expert.
No, they're there.
We're going to do a whole podcast
for that because it is specific to you. Yes, you can do it, and it's specific on how you travel. You can mastermind it and just know the game. Mm-hmm. But we have for credit card rewards. We'll save that for another show. But it's out there. It's opportunity and, to save money.
Right. And related to that for the boomers, especially, I mean, from a lot of people though, in corporate travel, you might be traveling a lot and getting your miles, your rewards, you're using that for your family vacations. You already have status with an airline, with a hotel chain. You're enjoying that. You're utilizing it both personally and professionally. What happens when you're not there? When you don't have the company card to use, when you don't have status, the idea of, all those points I was accumulating that, you know what, it wasn't really part of my travel budget back then, account for that. At least be aware of that. Because if you're using points to pay for a lot of stuff, what happens when you're not getting those free points? Mm-hmm.
Good, yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
So what happens if somebody gets sick overseas? I remember my... I won't say who it is, but an extended ex-family member was in Tahiti for 3 weeks and had an attack of gallbladder that she wasn't aware she had gallbladder issues. Ended up with
significant, I'm sure.
Critically sick.
Yeah.
They had to life flight her to.
Wow.
The medical situation was very
limited.
Socialized, type, dare I say.
Yeah.
So they had to life flight her to Hawaii, to Honolulu, and I'm talking tens of thousands of dollars just to do that. So how do you prepare for a trip, if you're going overseas, what should be on the radar?
Well, the easy words are the travel insurance. But again, we talk insurance, you got to understand what you're buying.
And we're not insurance agents.
No, we're not.
When you say travel insurance.
There's all different kinds. Some people think travel insurance is insuring the airfare, where if something goes wrong, we can just get refunded on the travel. But no, there's full health coverage. Medicare is very good with travel. So understand how, if you're on Medicare for a boomer, that what is covered and what is not covered. But you could do added travel insurance,
sickness. Credit card insurance. Well, would credit card insurance help with that?
Oh, it wouldn't. I don't believe it would. I mean, no absolutes, but back to the idea of you're overseas, something happens and you have that health insurance policy domestically, mm-hmm. you know, that one you get through work. Well, it might also come back to why were you traveling? You know, if you're overseas, I can't help but look maybe at myself here. You're doing something, you know, you're getting something done. And let's say it's a procedure or something. That's not going to be covered on your insurance. So if you're overseas and something bad happens and you need Life Flighted back, not only was that procedure not covered, but all the complications, all the travel, everything else isn't covered either. So the idea, too, of why were you traveling, what was going on, if that fun family vacation and something happened and you need Life Flighted out, yes, you might still be covered. But that person at that hospital may be standing there with a credit card reader, literally, waiting for your card to say, yes, we'll get reimbursed from your insurance, but for now, we're not letting you leave the country de facto without getting your card info or paying this bill.
Yeah.
So that, again, things that can really hang you up if you're overseas.
And what are you doing while you're overseas? Mm. Are you parasailing, biking, hiking, mountain climbing, you name it, across the board, those are added risk, skiing. Right, all added risks. Mm-hmm. Again, boomers are very functional, so
right.
I wouldn't hold it. They could be doing that kind of stuff.
Right.
So,
read the fine print of your insurance policy.
Yes.
I've heard some boomers are staying in one place for like months at a time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. But is it cheaper or more expensive than taking like a regular vacation?
Cheaper.
Do that.
I think if you use those long term rentals.
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic tool. You go. Pick a favorite city. My favorite, San Diego. I know you love San Diego.
Yeah, I do. Right? I won't rep Barcelona.
Barcelona, yeah. Right?
You fix somewhere fun.
You do a long-term rental for a month. I think that's fantastic because you're hunkered down in one place. There's still added cost. Whether you eat at home or eat at that location, it's still a food cost.
Yeah.
How comparable is it as far as cost of living?
Yeah.
I think it's less expensive.
And depending upon where and how long, maybe it's an overseas community of all expat Americans. I mean, there's more and more of those that are out there. And again, I know we talked about health insurance and travel and some of the fear of, you know, medicine overseas. But on the contrary, too, you might go in there and for a couple bucks be able to get looked after, get everything done, get your prescription updated. So sometimes when you're moving to that new area or you're considering traveling, there's nothing better sometimes than what would be available to me. What would a trip to the hospital or the pharmacy look like? You know, I know you don't want to waste your valuable vacation time on that, but the longer you're going to be somewhere, you know, you're going to India for half the year, you're coming back in retirement, you know, where would that local facility be if I needed something? What does that look like? Then you feel a lot more comfortable traveling. Mm.
Did you ever hear the story about the 80-some-year-old woman that was living on cruise ships?
Oh, sure.
She retired.
I know someone who looked into that, and it's this was 20 years ago. It was $240,000 a year.
Ooh.
It was 20, 25 years ago.
This woman said it was cheaper than what her cost of living would be.
No. There's a chance.
Yeah, if she was spending $20,000.
I think she stays on the same ship too.
Yeah.
Yeah, if she was spending $20,000 a month, it's the same cost. If it's $30,000 a month, it's cheaper. I mean, you think about the size of the home.
I think it's probably a little bit more pricey now, but also the type of cruise. What are you eating? Is it cheeseburger and pizza, or are you getting some sushi and all based on where you're living
and if we're
touring to?
No, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
If we're really going there too, then, I mean, seeing some of the brochures, you're joining a country club and an HOA at the same time, and you're a homeowner basically. So if you do buy one of those rooms on a ship, you're responsible for your monthly spend, whether you're on the ship or not. I mean, it's fun to travel around the world, but when your kid's getting married, you're going to want to be away somewhere for a month. You're still paying for your space.
Yeah, good.
I did read an article about that, though.
You still have to hit your minimum spend. Yeah. Sometimes there's insurance. You want to remodel it. I mean, there are definite specializations there.
I didn't even know that was possible.
Well, the article I read is they sold the house and went on a cruise around the world endlessly. And I'm like, that's bold.
Yeah.
Because you still got to live. So when you go landside, where are you going to live? So right. I don't know.
It was kind of fun. I had friends that they were, again, looking for, at that point, a bigger boat. You know, they were boat owners, yacht owners. They were able to travel on it. So they sold that. And in the meantime, they went on one of these cruise ships as they were waiting on the next boat to come available, be built, et cetera. They like that cruise ship so much. Why get a yacht on our own? They just joined the cruise ship. So the idea of being able to travel around the world and not have some of those ongoing costs of ownership, having to hire your own captain, crew, all the, I mean, again, if you're at that level and you're being serious about it, these are options. And you, again, the idea of you've got one retirement plan, think it through, plan ahead. And if some of these things sound exciting and outside of your reach, start planning early.
Mm-hmm. At what, 30?
Earlier than that, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
And it's never too late either, though.
Yeah. So talking about vacation homes and buying a vacation home, let's say in another country, what does that do to somebody's estate plan?
I have to understand the estate laws. It complicates things because how does it apply? How will the asset transfer or be included or not included in the estate? Does it claw back like based on citizenship? It's complex then if you're dual citizenship, then you have to understand the laws that are from the U.S. side and the other country.
So you need two attorneys then.
An international attorney should be able to cover it based on the specialty, but it needs to be considered and looked at and reviewed.
Mm-hmm. And you may be saying to yourself, well, I don't have that home overseas. Well, maybe you have a timeshare. And if you do have that timeshare and it's based overseas, again, how is that beneficiary set up? How is it owned? You know, going through estate plans where there might be a timeshare in there, there are ways that you could go ahead and have a takeover or basically be able to say, you know, what happens when I pass away? So if you're planning ahead and think it through, that's another option.
I can't imagine. Where would you buy a vacation home in another country? If you had a choice.
South
France.
That sounds wonderful right now. I'm going to stick to Barcelona again, you know?
Yeah.
The weather's beautiful. It's like San Diego weather.
But then you have to learn how to speak French.
That's fine.
Or not.
There's plenty of places I'd love to live internationally, but if I chose to, I would just rent.
Yeah.
Just rent a place for a month or two. And yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That'd be your home base and just go around, right?
When you can get over some of the emotions that go with ownership or the pride of ownership, the mobility that can come around with this too, if you're someone who wants to be mobile, that's everyone's life's a little different. But it's wonderful sometimes to be able to turn in the keys, let the lease expire and go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, family travel and financial boundaries. So what if they want to pay for a family trip? How do they make sure it's generous but not risky?
Again, budget, right? And what are you paying for? There's got to be a family meeting, conversation, who's paying for what?
Bar of expectation is.
Yeah, bar of expectation. Again, it's a budgetary expense. Mm-hmm. I'll cover airfare and hotel. Mm-hmm. You got to cover the meals, mm-hmm. right? So it's just a family conversation. There's a budget. It's always the answer.
Yeah, you might be along for the ride, having a wonderful trip sponsored by family. How many massages or how often you go to the spa, how many facials you get, you know, when it's all on one credit card.
Right.
These are things that can happen when you want to be generous. You don't, hey, I didn't say you couldn't do that. I didn't say that. So again, assume maybe.
Tugging at heartstrings.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Just think of, I hate to say worst case, but maybe best case. Someone goes along with you and they enjoy everything they could enjoy. Are you prepared for that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I know that we're not security experts, but in your mind, what should we tell boomers to watch out for when they are traveling to keep them safe from scams?
Oh, obviously your belongings, right? The classic purse, right? Put it in front of you, not behind you. There's plenty of information out there that you can do a quick search and say, okay, what do I have to worry about? Pickpocket. Right, those are big international public transport.
Passports. I mean,
do you bring it with you, or do you keep it in a hotel safe? Right,
yeah.
And I'm always torn by it.
I am too.
And because where do you put your passport? It's got to be in a bag.
Yeah.
Right, because it's
and
a little larger.
And then if it's stolen,
then the bag you lose the bag, you're in trouble.
Can
right?
you make a copy of your passport?
Certainly.
To use it, so you can put one in the safe and keep one on you. Then,
well, that's the thing, right? Make a backup copy of everything digitally. Right. Mm-hmm. Before you leave, whether it's a driver's license, passport, just so you have some, you can prove at least to the bare minimum who you are.
Yeah. You may not be official, but at least you've got your passport number on there or something like that. And you kind of hit on it too, though, the idea of whether it's a pickpocket or just I was in the pool and the diamond came out of my ring. I mean, something like that, mm-hmm. that's basic, but it's so real.
Yeah.
Did you have the insurance on that? Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of maybe you're not traveling, but you're staying at home. Either way, if you own a lot of things, you enjoy wearing your pieces and your stuff, make sure it's properly insured. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're in the south of France and someone holds you up or something, you want to keep that watch right over. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have to worry about, you know, what happens here. That's the kind of thing insurance hopefully gives you.
Okay. Thank you. Right. I'm ready to jump on a plane.
Let's go.
Maldives, here I come. If I could just do it without just going over the ocean, I'd be better off. Thanks for tuning in today. We appreciate it. We hope you share with your friends. Join us again.
Media, think big.